Hi, everyone. Can you hear me? How's everyone doing? You guys tired yet? I gotta tell you, I'm super tired right now. It's a long day, and we've learned a lot today, right? Who hasn't learned anything today? You haven't learned anything today? Do you want to learn something? Maybe. It's okay. It doesn't matter. Here for the fun, right? Yay. Well, thanks for coming. I know it's late. I know you guys are already waiting for the beer. I know I am. I wish they let us drink and present. Now that would be fun, right? Watch me here. No. Anyway, so this session is actually, we're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about some technologies that you might be able to use into your applications to make them easier for your customers and more productive for your customers as well. We're going to talk about more personal computing and what more personal computing is. So first of all, we at Microsoft are really big believers of mobile first, cloud first. And more personal computing is actually where that shines, and how you can see how when you combine mobile and cloud, and you can see how they work together at scale to provide a more personal experience for the users. And it all starts with human-computer interaction. Now, this is a study. Like, this is a whole thing that's been going on for years and years of universities, of professors studying, researching. How do people interact with computers? How do we use computers? What is easiest to use computers? And it's been going on for a very long time. Who can tell me when was the mouse first used or invented? What year? Or roughly year? What is it? 60-something. That's right, actually. So that's a mouse. So the first mouse was actually, yes, it was in 65. It was actually done as a university research. There was professors that did some research to see how it works. It wasn't until the 70s when actually it was done as a corporate research to see if industry can actually use this. But it actually didn't make it to human usage, to consumer usage, until the 80s, until 81, 82, 84, when it started showing up in the Xerox machines, when it started showing up in Apple II, for example, et cetera. So it was a whole gap of when the technology was first introduced, when they were trying to do research on it, and then when it actually went into full use. And now today, we can't imagine working without the mouse. So I think we can see that with many different technologies with how we work with computers. There was a lot of research done with many of these technologies. You can see for GUIs, it was first actually, people started working on it in the 60s. They were trying to do research on how we can work with computers with a graphical user interface. But it didn't really make it to consumer usage until the 80s again. That was a 25-year difference. Well, people were doing research and making sure that it's viable for consumers. Same thing for text editing, using Windows and graphical user interfaces, hypertext, gesture recognition. So there's a lot of this technology that have been in the works. And then I think right now, today, we're in the at that point where a lot of these technologies are starting to become very commercial, and you can actually start using them in your machines. And with Windows 10, one of the things that we started doing is saying that more personal computing is now one of the core pillars of Windows 10, using these core features as part of Windows 10 and as part of Azure. We're doing a lot of work in Azure with machine learning and Project Oxford to also bring a lot of these technologies so you can use them within your application easily. One of the examples that I can show you, I can tell you about, is Kinect. Have you guys used Kinect? There's one downstairs. Did you guys play with the one downstairs? With the games? One person. Thank you. The Kinect has been part of our products for several years now, but it didn't really come to life until the Xbox One. When the Xbox One came out, the Kinect was an integral part of the experience. When you walk into a room, the Kinect immediately recognizes who you are. It knows your identity and can immediately log you in into the system. You can say, show my stuff. It knows who you are. It knows who my is, and it can show you your stuff. It can be very contextual in that way. It knows many things about you. Another thing is Cortana. Cortana we introduced in Windows Phone 8.1, but Windows 10, we made it as a core feature of the platform, and now it's available across mobile, across desktop, it's coming to Xbox. We said it's coming to HoloLens as well. So it is one of those features that it doesn't get more personal at this point. It knows who you are. It collects data about you, about what you like, who you don't like, etc. And it collects this data across these devices so you can continue the work from one device to the other device, remind you if you forgot something, and be able to understand what you're saying and what your intent is, be using natural language. And it runs across all these different devices. And because Windows 10 is running across many different devices, all this work that we're doing for more personal computing can absolutely be used across many different form factors and can be reused across everything, so you don't have to rewrite everything. So I'm going to talk about these, and what I want to call these the human technologies. The human technologies are inputs and outputs that we as people use to communicate with each other and what we can use to make it easier to work with computers by using these. I want to start with a very simple one, which is gesture. Now I took a bunch of these definition from what the word means for each one of these features. So gesture is an interesting one. It says it's a movement of part of the body, especially a hand or the head, to express an idea or meaning. The way I understand this is gesture is who we are. I mean, without gesture, without me moving my hands here, looking like whatever I'm looking at like this, it kind of helps me in my language. How do you tell somebody they're doing something wrong if you don't see, what the hell is wrong with you? You know, how do you do that? You know, you tell somebody, go there. You know, you point at things. By gestures, it's something that from babies we've kind of been used to using, and it's kind of part of our language and how we communicate. So it's been very natural to use gestures when we use computers. And gesture has been one of the very early technologies that we've implemented in computing. We've been doing this forever, and you've been doing this within your applications for a very long time. It's part of the system, it's part of the applications that you're building. Now, using a touchpad, that's some sort of gestures. It has built-in gestures, you're moving your hand across, you're gesturing. You know, using the touchscreen, that's still also gesturing. There's many different things built into the platform that you can use to create these gestures and, you know, interact with the system in a very natural way. Using a webcam, they can see you. You can do very simple, almost 3D gesturing using things like OpenCV, for example. Using the sensor and devices in phones or the band, for example, they can do very rich 3D sensing. Or using things like depth cameras, such as the Kinect, they can do this at scale when multiple people can detect what they're saying, what they're doing with their hands, and what is wrong with them. You know, you can do that. And we've been doing that for a very long time, and you've been doing that for a very long time. I want to just talk about two different things that are in the platform. This thing hates me. Anyway, two different things that you might not know about that are in gesture. I'm gonna go through this. One is the gesture recognizer. It's very easy to add gestures to your applications just by using a gesture recognizer, doing things like pinch to zoom and swiping, et cetera, and moving. You can do that really quickly, and we have that support in the platform in Windows 10, and it's been around since Windows 8.1. Another one is the device out sensors. This has actually been improved immensely in the Windows 10 platform. You can add your own sensors, implement the sensors already there, and you can do very rich gesture recognition using these. So if you haven't looked at these, definitely check them out and make your applications more easier for users to use. Now let's actually go into something that's actually more interesting than gestures, in my opinion, which is identity, or as the internet likes to call this, the fact of being who or what a person or thing is. So you can look at me. If you know who I am, the second time you meet me, you know who I am. Unless I'm not memorable, I'm Nicola. And you know who I am, because you can tell faces, etc. And computers, this hasn't been easy for them. You know, when you walk to your daughter, or a three-year-old daughter, they don't come to you like, I don't know who you are, please tell me your 35-digit password so I know who you are. We don't do that. You know, we're people, we know how this works. It's very easy and natural for us to come up to somebody and just start interacting with them without requiring to have that initial handshake, which is going to take all this time. So with Windows 10, we introduced Windows Hello. Now, Windows Hello is a collection of authentication methods that allow the machine to identify a user by using their face, using a fingerprint sensor, or using the iris scanner. For example, I have right now a little RealSense camera right there. I shouldn't have done that. There you go. So just a RealSense camera. This has several sensors on it. It has a depth sensor. Has an infrared sensor, has a regular camera, and you can use these technologies to successfully identify a user of who they are when they register. And uses biometric authentication and uses, it's very secure to a level that it actually be, it's, we've rated it to be enterprise security level. So it's one out of 100,000 false positives. The cool thing about this is that there's actually been research to see if they can fake it. And then an independent firm in Australia actually tried to break Windows Hello by taking twins, taking many different sets of twins, and see if Windows Hello can fail. And at 100% of the time, Windows Hello was able to identify the correct set of person in this. It's that secure that can be used with people that we can't, as humans, identify, and then Windows Hello can do that. And then we are seeing more and more of these devices coming in with more and more of these sensors built in. The new Surface Pro 4, the new Surface Book, the Lumia 950, 950 XL all come with biometric authentication. The 950 XL has an iris scanner, so you just point to your face and kind of knows, you know, who you are because it can see your eye. The new Book can actually see, you know, can see your face and understand who you are. So how does this work in Windows? Essentially, this is what you see when you log into Windows. Just a little eye that's looking for you. And it's incredible fast how it works. As soon as it sees you, it immediately knows that it's you, if this starts working. It's me. And I can actually show you how this works with this camera. Let's try it real quick. Hopefully it's going to work. So there it is. It's looking for me right now. I'm holding my camera. And hopefully with this microphone, it should see who I am. And immediately, without actually doing anything, it immediately logged me in. So wasn't that, have you guys tried this? No? Yes? Okay, let's see if it's going to log you in. He doesn't believe me. It doesn't recognize you, okay. Go away. Go away. You broke it. Oh, it timed out. Here we go. I'll just log in with my password now. Thanks for breaking it. A little round of applause for the guy that broke it. Anyway, so that's the way to identify a user. But we've also worked really hard to make sure that we can pair this up with third-party services where your applications can take advantage of this to log in users with their biometric authentication without a user having to enter their password. So we introduced Microsoft Passport. Microsoft Passport is a service that's built into Windows 10 right now that uses two-factor authentication and is paired with Windows Hello to do really secure handshaking between your services. So let me show you how this works, actually. I have a little diagram. I want to punch this in the face. So imagine you're in your application. You have a little login, username, password. You have a login button. And then let's say you have a login to authenticate with Windows Hello or Microsoft Password, either one. Let's say the username enters their username and password to log in. Instead of pressing login, they press the authenticate with Microsoft Passport. This is the first time they do this on their machine. They do this. What happens is your service will go to your server somewhere, authenticate the user, verify using your regular authentication methods, verify that this is the user, and come back to the app and say, yep, that's the guy, that's the correct password, everything. Microsoft Passport, at this point, what we'll do is we'll authenticate the user using Windows Hello, say, okay, I need to make sure that that's who you are that's logged into the system. Great, it's Nicola. Using this, it's going to open up a vault. In this vault, it's going to generate a private and a public key. It's going to take this private and public key, it's going to store the private and public key locally onto the machine, and it's going to send the public key over to your service. Your service is going to take this public key, and then it's going to simply store it and associate it with this user. That's great, and the user is now logged in and it's been associated with Windows Hello. The next time the user comes to your application and forever on after that, they don't have to log in anymore. Simply what they need to do is a new Windows Hello pop-up will pop up. Say, okay, I just need to make sure that's you. The user will authenticate Windows Hello. Microsoft Passport, this will open up the vault that the private key is stored in. So Microsoft Passport can take this private key, sign a little secret with this private key, and then send it over to the server. The server can decode this message, make sure that it's the right message with the public key that it already has. Because it's already associated with the same user, it already logs in the user, and the user is all safe. It's logged in. They never have to enter the passport. And then they're authenticated to the application super quickly. Now, this, you can see how you can actually implement this with your applications very easily. And we already have many samples that show how to do this. This already works with Microsoft account out of the box. So if you use the Microsoft Store, the Windows Store right now to download applications, if you have Windows Hello open to purchase something, you don't have to enter your password. You can just use Windows Hello to authenticate, for example. And you can do the same thing within your application, within your service. It also already works with Azure Active Directory. So if you use Azure Active Directory, you can use this out of the box. And more and more services are coming. We have things like Salesforce and other partners who already started to use this within the applications, within their services, and within applications on the platform. So it's very easy to use. Now, the next human technology that I like to talk about is speech. Now, this is one of my favorite ones, and probably one of the most difficult ones for computers to understand. I think we've spent a lot of time trying to teach computers to understand natural language, and it's been taking longer than we've expected. Now, speech is defined as the expression or the ability to express thoughts and feelings by articulate sounds. Now, I'm talking to you in some weird way, and then you're understanding what I'm saying. There's no structure to the way I'm talking. Of course, we have language that we've defined, but there's not really a really strict structure of how things need to go. And you understand what I'm saying. And we need to teach computers how to do this. And we've done a lot of work to the platform to do that. There's a lot of work done on the Universal Windows 10 platform, the client side, to do this, to be able to do speech recognition, speech synthesis. And then we've done a lot of stuff in the cloud with what we call Project Oxford, that's being able to do the same things that you can do on the client, plus more. And you can actually do this across multiple devices, not just Windows. You can do it on Android, iOS, web, everywhere. So let's talk about three of these things, which is synthesis, recognition, and Cortana. Now, to do synthesis in the platform, it's very easy. This is the ability to synthesize speech from text. So I type in some text, the system can say it. Who has here tried that? You know, went to Microsoft Bob back in the day and say, F you. No? Nobody's tried that? Come on, one person tried it. Yeah, yeah. That's my friend over there. Now, you can do this really easily within your application. It's very simple to do this. You simply use a speech synthesizer. Using the speech synthesizer, you take a string that you want to synthesize. And this can be actually an XML file that's formatted for pronunciation, if you want to say it in a certain way. Or you can just pass in a clear string. And then call synthesize text to stream async. This will generate a stream of sound. And then what you can do is you can take a media element or the background media player and simply set the source to the stream that you just generated. Three lines of code, and your application is already talking to the user. And you can't shut up. It's annoying now. You can also do the same thing using Project Oxford. In Project Oxford, the way it works is it's essentially REST APIs. You send a request to Project Oxford. You say, synthesize something. Sends you back a stream of data that you can play back within your application. And we have client libraries for iOS, Android, and Windows that you can use. Or you can use the REST APIs if you wish. Very easy to use. Send a post to synthesize. Send an XML of what you wanted to synthesize. And it will simply return back a stream of data that you can play back within your application. That's that easy. Now, the next thing you might want to do is recognize what the user has said, the text that the user has spoken. Now, this is nothing new. We've had this in the platform for a very long time. Windows 8.1 has had this. Windows 8.0 has had this. So this is completely nothing new. But we've continuously improved this with services in the cloud and services in the client that allow you to do more accurate recognition. And there's two things you can do on the client right now. You can do one-time recognition, which means is you can set the system to say, recognize what the user is saying now. And then system will say, OK, what is the user saying? It will detect when the user has stopped talking, and will simply return the text that the user has said. Very simple. You use a speech recognizer that's built in the platform. You compile constraints async. Essentially, what this means is you compile a dictionary that you want to recognize. If you don't pass anything to this function, it will simply use Bing for anything the user wants to say. So you can essentially understand anything. This will essentially go to Bing, understand in the cloud, and then return back the results. You can actually pass your own dictionary here and make this run completely offline if you want. So if you want to limit that to a specific set of dictionaries. You call recognize async. It's an asynchronous API. It will start listening to the user, detect when the user has stopped talking, and simply return back string. That's it. And then you can reuse this into your applications to whatever you need to do with this string. You can also do continuous recognition. And this is recognition, two things you can do with this. You can either do dictation, for example, let the user speak for long periods of time with pauses in between, et cetera, et cetera. Write big emails. Or you can write, you can use this for commands. So a user can have some kind of commands they can say throughout the lifetime of your application. They can be saying, open this, open that. It doesn't matter what it is. You get events when the user has said something. To do this, you still use the same API, the speech recognizer. You need to compile some constraints. You can't use just the Bing constraint. So in this case, I'm doing very simple, just start listening. That's the only thing this is going to listen for, just with the start listening command. Or you can actually just pass in a file, an XML formatted file, which is actually a W3C format that's, you know, universal format of what you want to do this to recognize, and there's many ways to do this. You just pass in that file. There you go. You compile the constraints just like last time. And in this case, you use the continuous recognition session that's part of the speech recognizer to assign an event handler to the results generated. That way, when it recognizes something, it will call this handler that you've set up. That way, you know what the command that was recognized. And then you just simply call start async. And this will just listen. That's it. And then you can stop it or do whatever you need. Next time the user says start listening, this method will get called, and you can handle that somehow. You can also do recognition in the cloud with Project Oxford. Project Oxford allows you to send a post query with the audio data that the user had generated. So you collect this audio data yourself, you pass that to Project Oxford, and Project Oxford generates that. It's very easy to use. Now, Cortana has been one of the things that I think everyone's most excited about. And it's one of the things that we've made available to developers to use in many different ways. And I want to show you how that works. Now, I have created a little demo that I want to show you. I'm a little nervous about this demo because it's unpredictable. It's, well, let's just see. I call it my best friend. You guys want to meet my best friend? Yay, let's meet my best friend. Here it is. That's my best friend. Now, this is a very beautiful UI that I've created myself. And you can't take this. But essentially, it's just a way for me to talk to people. I can't make friends. I'm not a friendly guy. So this is kind of an easy way for me to talk to somebody. So I can just, you know, talk to a bot that's somewhere in the cloud that it can talk to me. It says, there's no sense to sit all glum and muttering. Luck will always change for the better. How does it know? You know, so you can do this. But I've also added the ability to talk to it through just the same APIs that I showed you. So if I say, start listening, thank you for that.
Piece of cake.
How are you today?
Friday is the day I play and have fun. How about you?
I'm working.
I will bet being working is lots of fun.
Okay, shut up. Gosh. Anyway, but I've also integrated Cortana into this because I don't want to be typing best friend every time I want to talk to her and say start best friend, you know, start talking. I might be in my car and I want to start talking to it. I might be able to use Cortana. So I can say, best friend, I want to talk. And then it will do that. Best friend, I want to talk.
Sure thing, let's talk best friend. Would you like to throw confetti with me?
No.
Half a minute.
Okay, shut up. So I activated my best friend using Cortana. It knew I started it with Cortana, it immediately started talking to me. It didn't wait for me to write anything or anything. It immediately started in voice mode. So it knew that. So you can pass your own commands to your applications, pass in some parameters. What's up with this guy? On Facebook, you can say, what's up with Nicola? Open up the Facebook application and show you Nicola. You can do those implementation. But with Windows 10, we also introduced the ability for you to integrate with Cortana in background way. That way, your application can respond to the user through Cortana without even opening the application. So if I want to find something really quickly or get some information really quickly, I can use Cortana without even accessing my application. So in this case, let's try this. I want to go to New York, best friend.
Here you go, best friend. It's New York.
So it's a little smarty, but you can actually respond it back within the Cortana application. This was actually created by a background task, background service, that Cortana accessed, talked to background service, says, this is what the user said. What do you want me to respond with? And then my best friend, being a little smarty, responded with an image of New York, obviously. So it's very easy for you to implement this within your applications and have fun with it and have your users actually make it more productive for them. Now, I talked about, recognizing and talking back to the user, but what do you do with this information when you recognize it? Like, how do you use this information? It's like we've been able to do this forever, and it's been nice. One of the things that I've seen developers do when they implement the application, and it's not the best thing to do, is implement speech in a way that other input modalities have already been used. Like, you can do the same thing with keyboard and mouse, but I want to do this. Let me show you an example. Let's say you have an application that has many different tiles or a list view or something that it uses, a list of something. And you want to find something. You're scrolling through this application. You want to use voice. So you say, hey, okay, start listening. Select items. Application selects item. Great. It's not there. What do I do now? Okay. Next page. Okay. It's not there. Next page. Not there again. Next page. It's not there again. Oh, wait, there it is. Item 1, item 5. Okay. Which one do you want? Item 1 or item 2? Item 5. What is that? Okay. So this is something that with your mouse or with your finger, it will take 2 seconds. With speech, it will take you a minute to do this. And it's not the best experience to implement within your applications. Now, what can you do with speech that would actually be beneficial to your users? What if you do the same thing, this tasks, but you let the user say something very naturally to them to be able to find something? Let's say they want to say, show me items with characteristic X from N days ago, whatever. They're doing something with their natural language. And the application is just being able to, okay, here are the items, and you just tap on the item. Now, this is much faster to find items than using touch or using your mouse. And it's more natural for the user to kind of have this conversation with the applications and to implement this. And we've been doing a lot of work to enable this. And one of the services that we have that makes this possible is actually part of Project Oxford in Azure called Lewis. And Lewis is a weird name, but actually stands for Language Understanding Intelligence Service. Much better Lewis, don't you agree? Yeah. Essentially what it does is allows you to pass in some content, some text, and then Lewis will understand this content and give you intent information of what the user is trying to do and what the user is trying to say in a more programmatic way. So that way you pass this news about flight delays, and then Lewis will analyze this and will simply return you a very simple JSON content saying, the user, there's a 99.85% the user's trying to find some news about flight details. A very programmatic way for you to kind of interact with the users and use this within your applications. And this is available now. And you can use this for many different scenarios. you know, do you have direction to my friend Steve's house? You know, it knows who your friend is. Why would you not say my friend? Why would you have to specify who my friend is? You know, show me the tweets in the last hour about MPC, but only show from people I'm following. Like, you know, this is super simple something you will say, but how would you do this with mouse and keyboard? You know, it's much easier to do this way. What are this month's sales projections by city? Order them by sales in descending order. You know, it can continue context from one to the other. You can implement this within your application. Correlate this data with median income in each city. You know, just being able to use this in a more natural, easier way with things like Power BI, et cetera. So you can see that it's very easy, and you can actually do this today within your applications. Now let's move on to the fourth human technology that I like to call, and this is inking. Now, the definition of inking that I found is kind of weird. Colored fluid or paste used for writing, drawing, printing, or duplicating. It's not wrong. That's exactly what inking is. But in this context, that's not what we mean. So I kind of rewrote this myself. So this is not the official definition of inking. But it's the expression of the ability to express thoughts and feelings by writing or drawing. So what does this mean? We have the ability to express ourselves by drawings. You know, proof. Cave drawings from the, I don't know how many thousands of years ago. You know, from the early days, even before speech was available, people were able to communicate to each other using drawings, using writings, using whatever it is. And that's very natural for us. You know, being able to write something down, you press, you know, turn on your pen and you kind of start writing things down. And why can't we just enable this within our applications? And that's something we've already started doing within, even starting with Windows 8 and 8.1 and now in Windows 10. Using the pen, for example, that comes with this device. And in Windows 10 specifically, we've made inking as a first-class citizen. We've started from scratch. And we've been able to take the same functionality, the same stack that we use for inking in our first-party applications, like Microsoft Edge and Microsoft OneNote, which I'm sure at least one of you has used one of them. Yes, there's the one person right there. I hope most of you, come on, these things are awesome. Thank you. And you know, you can notice it's very fluid, it's very natural. And we've made this available to developers to use within their applications very easily. We call it Direct Ink. And it's actually a hardware accelerated, very smooth API that you can use within your XAML directly. Let me show you how this works with this not working thing. So imagine you have, this is XAML, and this is my representation of what this XAML will look like. This is not real what this will look like, but ignore this. Anyway, imagine you have a grid, imagine you have an image. Let's say you want to add annotation to this image. How do you do that? Easy. You draw an in canvas on top of it. That's all you do. You draw an in canvas, and you give it a name, so you can reference this in canvas. And you can see I put a little color. It's invisible, you can't really see it. But it allows you to draw on top of it. Now, when you go back to your C# code, by default, the ink canvas only enables the pen. So you can only draw with it in the pen, and you can still use your keyboard and mouse and your touch to interact with the content that's underneath the ink canvas. But let's say you want to also enable drawing for your pen, mouse, and for touch. You can do that. You simply just say inkpresenter.inputDeviceTypes, and you say pen, touch, and mouse. Now, when I use my finger and my mouse, I can draw on top of everything just like I can do with pen. So you have full control of how you want to enable that. Anyway, you can also control how the ink looks. So here, for example, I'm using drawing attributes to set this to look kind of like a pen. I do that by setting it not to be a highlighter, so to actually draw on top of everything, not to kind of overlay everything. I'm changing the pen tip size to be 2x2. I'm changing the shape to be a rectangle. I'm giving a color blue. And then on the ink presenter, I simply update the drawing attributes with that object that I've created. And then once I do that, I can use the pen and my finger, whatever. I can start drawing on top of this. Simple as that. Now let's say I want to recognize text. How do you do that? Like, that's difficult. You have all this, how do I recognize it? We've actually created that by using the ink recognizer container. The ink recognizer container is used with the ink canvas to simply take the strokes within the ink canvas. You pass it to the ink recognizer, which recognizes sync. It will simply return back an array with results of what it says where it is, what is the confidence that's what it says, and gives you options of maybe what something else it said. So you can take that, and you can say, okay, that says hello, that says world. Easy as that. Done. I don't have to do anything. What is that? 6 lines of code? We can get some here now. And we have some more functionality in this to make it easier for you. You can save all the strokes. So let's say you want to save this for later on. You simply just call the save async to, for example, a file stream. And this will save it to a stream. It saves it as a GIF file. And you can actually open it up in Explorer and see what the inking is. And then you can load it back up into the ink canvas again with load async from stream. You can load it back up the same content. Very easy to use. And then one thing I didn't show you is you can also set it to be an eraser by changing the mode. So you have full capability, full control of what you want this to look like. Now, I've been working on a little demo kind of to illustrate some of these technologies I was talking about. I'm going to take a little break and actually show you that demo. Before I do that, I want to kind of set the stage real quick. This is my friend. We look alike. No? A little bit. No. Anyway. This demo is about home inspection. Now, I don't know about here. In the United States, when you buy a house, the first thing, one of the things that you need to do is you need to hire a home inspector to come to your house. Let me show you my animations. That's the guy. Come to your house. To come to your house and inspect what's wrong with the house before you buy it. You need to make sure that, you know, it's not going to fall apart. You need to make sure that everything's okay, all the pipes and everything's okay before you buy this house. You need to know how this house, what condition this house is in. So these guys spend hours documenting the state of the house, taking pictures, annotating, doing everything. They go in the ceiling, they go under the house, they go everywhere. And they generate this document, which is, you can see here, it's 106 pages. This document contains images of everything, annotations, notes of what's wrong with the house, every single thing that's wrong with this house. You can see here, I don't know if you can see it, but it's in the ceiling. Like, who goes in the ceiling? This is some electrical stuff that he's looking at. He's even checking the oven to make sure that the temperature in the oven is right with the temperature. Like, who cares, right? But he's doing this. And apparently, this is a real report from my friend. That's animal feces. So there's some poop in the ground, need to take care of that. Like, okay, thank you. So he goes through this, spends hours. And the way he does this, he has his portable camera, he takes pictures, he plugs it into his computer, spends hours annotating things, writing notes and everything. So I thought, let's have a little experiment. Let's spend some time to see how we can make this easier using these human technologies and make an application. Now, this is work in progress, I'm going to warn you. But I'll show you how far I've gotten so far. So here we go. So here's Lambda. I call it Lambda because I don't know why I picked that name. You can see I've already implemented Windows Hello with this. So immediately, as soon as I started my application, one thing we wanted to make sure is that this is information that customers trust the home inspector with. We don't want this information to come into the hands of the wrong people. You know, this is personal information about the house, about everything. So we'll make sure that this is authenticated only for the user that's meant for this. So they have, of course, they have a system somewhere in the service that has all this data. And to log in, they have username and password. I've done that already. I've authenticated. And this can already immediately recognize me. I can just say, OK, it's recognized me. Didn't have to enter a password. Didn't have to enter a username. Already logged in and already working. Let me show you how you can actually do the authentication part, the registration part, real quickly. Let me uninstall the application to clear out the private and public key that's stored for this. I'm going to reinstall it by using the app here. That was quick, wow. There it is. Now, nothing's stored, I need to log in, so I'm going to use my credentials. And instead of saying traditional sign-in, I'm going to sign in with Microsoft Password, just like I told you before. This is going to identify who I am. It's me. It's going to go to the server. It's going to create a public and private key and give that public key and associate with my account to the server. does that, and that's it. Now, next time I come to my application, I don't have to log in at all. That's it. Here I have some information. Now, one thing to note is that this is actually it's a Windows 10 application, so it runs across Windows 10 mobile, runs desktop everywhere. It's very responsive, well, at least as much as I tried it to be. Oops. Let's try this one more time. I logged out. And this application is full with bugs. There it is. This resolution is not that great. So it's actually fully responsive. You know, I've tried to put some animations into it. So this is essentially what a mobile look would, this is how the mobile application will look. You know, it's a very responsive application. So now you can actually go to see the details of my next house. Now, I'm going to inspect my own house. So here's my house. You know, it gives me some details. So one of the things here that I wanted to do is be able to take pictures. You know, that's the obvious thing. So imagine this application on my phone. I'm not going to show my phone because I need to see what I'm seeing. But it does run on my phone, hope you believe me. You take your application and you start taking pictures. So let's go ahead and do that. And then the pictures would show up and they would crash. Now that's intended because you want to, you know, want to embarrass yourself. Let's try this one more time. Oh, no, not now. Oh, yeah. There we go. So now you can take pictures of the audience. There we go. We can take a picture. There you go. Took a picture. You know, let me put this here. You can see here I have a couple things, location, defect, note. So I wanted to make it easier for them to use voice sort of as they're taking pictures to do this, so they can kind of use more natural language and say things like, this is the kitchen, there's a minor defect here, this is the kitchen, this is the garage. Apparently it doesn't like me right now. Take note. Take note. Now, of course, we're in presentation mode, and I've never presented this before, and it doesn't like me. So as I'm speaking, it would automatically populate all this information for me, so I don't have to come back later on. In addition, I've also added ability to kind of annotate things really easily by using the in canvas. I've used this, actually, it's a control that you can use, they can download from Visual Studio Extensions. That's the same control that's used in OneNote right now. So you don't have to build this. If you want, you can. And, you know, allows you to change colors and do different things. There we go. And then I can save this and I go move to the next picture and then take a picture there. I like you. There you go. Anyway, and then you come back here and then, you know, you have all this information and you can just, once you're done, there's a little button here, you can generate the report completely, and you're done even before you leave the customer house. You know, of course, added ability to open up the pictures again and kind of add and more notify and then change the annotation if you want, and you can add more notes, etc. One of the things that I also wanted to add was the ability to, you know, I was thinking, this is a tablet, right? Surface Pro. I'm going to take it. I'm going to go around. I'm not going to bring the keyboard with me everywhere I go. I want to be able to kind of write things down. When you go with a clipboard, you kind of write things down. You enter, what's your name? Okay, let me write that down. You know, so I want to be able to do the same thing. So what I thought is, why can't I just do that here? You know, I have a field. Why can't I just take the pen and kind of write over it to what it is? So I did that. I used the in canvas to simply just say, yes, no, shut up. And hopefully that's going to work. No, it doesn't work that way, so I'm going to redo it. Shut up. There we go. So immediately, it just enters in there. I don't have to use the keyboard. I can immediately just start. I'm holding it. I'm going to just enter the information that I need, and I'm done. Now, I showed you authentication. I showed you voice, not really. And I showed you inking. I also added Cortana to this. And let me show you how Cortana ties into this. Let's say I'm driving. I'm done with my customer. I want to see what my next customer is. I don't want to open an application and do that. I can simply ask Cortana to tell me where to go for my next customer. So I'm going to close the application and say, what's my next Lambda appointment?
You're all done for the day.
Now, of course, that's going to work. What's my next Lamna appointment?
Lamna to the rescue.
Here we go.
Your next appointment is the Michalev family. It looks like you are 20 minutes away. Should I let them know?
Sure.
Should I let the Michalev family know of your arrival?
Yes.
Great. I'll take care of it.
Safe driving. Thank you. It can detect where you are. It can help you, guide you toward the way. This is an unusual environment. I'm not going to be driving in front of 20 people trying to demo this, but you get the idea. So it immediately didn't open the application, didn't ask me to mess with the application while I'm driving, and simply just tell me where it is. I could add an option here to start into navigation immediately, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very easy to implement this between applications. What do you guys think? Was that good? No? Bad? Cool? Okay. Now, there's two more technologies I want to talk about. And these are not really on the client. Now, these are mostly on the cloud. These are technologies that we haven't really yet implemented on the client side yet because of many different reasons, I guess. One of the things is vision and being able to recognize something through a camera, being able to recognize that there's a person there, there's a dog there, there's a mountain there, there's a tree there. You know, this is a very difficult problem. This is a problem that's been trying to be solved for a very long time. And we've tried to do this with Project Oxford already. Your applications can now have the ability to understand and see the world around them and be smart about the environment they're in. So for example, with Project Oxford, using the vision and phase APIs, you can do many different things. Using the vision APIs, okay, I'm gonna stop using this. Who wants to come with me after this and break this? I'm gonna step on it. The first thing we've done is very simple, but actually it's something that a lot of people have been trying to struggle and spend a lot of time on is how do you scale and crop an image easily to the size that you want, but still keeping the content, retaining the key content that's in that image. And we have that. We have an API that takes an image, you give it how you want to crop it, it knows what the main content is in the image, and will just crop around it and send the content easily for you. Very simple. Another one is you can use this OCR, or reading words in images. So you can just pass an image that has some words in it, and then Project Oxford will say, okay, there's these words, this is where they are, very similar to how the in-canvas works. And it's very easy to use. It's just a REST API. And finally, we have an image, which is probably the most advanced out of the three, to understand content and features within an image. So in this case, it can understand that this is a swimmer. It knows approximately their age. It says 27, knows they're male. It says it's people swimming. It can detect things that are going on in that image. It's very easy for it to understand who it is. And it uses machine learning behind the scenes. And the more and more it's being used, the more smarter it gets and the more things it can understand. We've also created APIs for face detection and face recognition, et cetera. So we have five different things. Face detection, detect where the faces are. Now this already exists in client. You can do this right now. But this also tells you approximate age of the users. It tells you things that it's smart. So if you know Howl.net, have you guys heard of Howl.net? This essentially is exactly the same API that it uses. We have the ability to do face verification, to give it two faces and say, is this the same face? Yes or no, you know, compare the two faces. Or you can tell you how similar two faces are. If you've seen twins or not, uses that API, you know, compares the percentage of how similar two faces are. The ability to do groupings, so pass in many different faces and group them depending on their similar characteristics. And finally, being able to do face identification. So pass in 20, 30 images and then say, pass in one image and say, what user is this? And kind of identify that user out of the group that you've sent it. And it's very easy. This has been something that's been asked for a very long time, and you can use this very easily just by using some REST APIs. So here's an example of what this API will return. So if you want to do face detection, it simply says, this is the face rectangle, this is the location within the image, this is the age, the gender, the pose of the head, it's, you know, how is it rotated, the landmarks, where the eyes, where is everything, and we'll show you that really easily. And you can take this and you can do crazy things. I mean, you're developers, you can figure out how to use this. Now, the final thing I want to talk about, it's not really a human technology, but I think it's probably the most important, because this is what enables all the rich human interaction that's going to become more and more available in the future, and it's available now. And all the things that we're working on that is available to you is done through analytics and machine learning. Now, analytics is information resulting from the systematic analysis of data and statistics. So being able to collect data, be able to understand what this data means, be able to predict, be able to understand what the intent of this data is. In the 80s, data was completely offline. It was on records, it wasn't accessible, it was difficult to kind of collect this data and understand what it is. So we had a lot of trouble to kind of analyze this data. In the 90s, with the internet, data started actually having an IP. We can actually address data. We were able to access data. We were able to collect, join, do many different things with data. It's estimated by 2020 that the majority of the data in the world would actually be online and accessible right now. And we have more and more devices out there in the world that are collecting all this data. They're collecting information, all kinds of things for you. It's on a very big scale, and we need to have a way to analyze this data. And that's how it's possible to be able to make this rich interaction. For one example is the Microsoft Band. This is an all-day wearable, something you wear all day, has an all-day battery. It's always connected through your phone. It's always collecting some kind of data, has 10 or 11 sensors on it. Heart rate monitor, accelerometer, gyroscope, now it has a barometer and the new one. So it always collects all this data. And with the use of that data, we've created Microsoft Health that collects this data, analyzes this data, stores this data, and it's able to predict the health, the fitness status of a user, and even analyze and recommend how to use it to live better and be better by themselves. So this is something that's using all the services already available in Azure. And with this, we've created the ability for you to do this as well, using a suite of analytics that we call Cortana Analytics. It allows you to take a lot of data, big data, use machine learning, and transform that into something, intelligent action, in something statistical information, some data. And I have a video I want to show you of a partner that actually has done something with Cortana Analytics.
The US healthcare system is challenged by the task to deliver exceptional, personalized care at a lower cost. Despite spending nearly one-fifth of our gross domestic product on healthcare, we struggle to meet this goal. Financial pressures on care providers are increasing. This isn't sustainable. So how can we deliver high-quality, personalized care that patients deserve, given the cost pressures we face? At Dartmouth Hitchcock, we've created ImagineCare, a new cloud-based solution built on Cortana Analytics Suite and Microsoft Dynamics that enables providers to help patients achieve better health. With the help of Microsoft, Dartmouth Hitchcock is building a technology platform to serve healthcare organizations and patients across the country, setting a new standard for personalized care. Now, using machine intelligence, providers can develop a care plan that's unique to each patient. We can monitor patients from their homes, where data is collected from devices and sent to the cloud, to ImagineCare's 24/7 contact center, where registered nurses continually monitor a patient's health status and potentially serious trends.
Cortana, summarize health status for Ben Andrews.
Ben Andrews' weight has increased more than 2 pounds in the last 24 hours. Please review the home diuresis protocol prescribed by Dr. Phillips.
Patients get reminders and encouragement and dynamic updates to their care plans, improving their health, helping them avoid unnecessary trips to the emergency room, and reducing the cost of care. With support from loved ones and real-time interventions, there is less likelihood of readmission. With Cortana Analytics Suite and Microsoft Dynamics, we're transforming the way healthcare is delivered today, improving patient outcomes, reducing costs, and offering an unprecedented level of personalized care.
That was loud. So I went through 6 human technologies, at least that's what I want to call them. Hopefully you find this helpful. Hopefully you're going to start using this within your applications. Have anybody used any of these technologies within your applications yet? Yes, which one? Cortana and inking. And what did you think?
It's great.
See, you heard it from him, not me. Okay, well, I hope you liked it. The code for best friend is online on GitHub. The code for Lambda is not yet because it's not finished, but I'll put it on there as soon as I can. If you do have any questions, please ask me, but that's all I have for you, and thank you for listening and being awesome people. Yes. In Windows IT Core, that's a very good question. So the question was, which technologies were available in Windows IT Core? Trying to think. You know what? Let me get back to you on that one. I'm not exactly sure I'm going to tell you, but I'm going to lie to you. I haven't tried them myself. Okay? Any questions? Sorry? I believe the recognition right now is about 50, but I might lie to you. There's actually a link I can point you to online that always increases, and we always keep adding new and new languages that we can add. Now, it's one thing is worth to mention is Cortana and speech recognition, even though we put them under the same name, they're different. Cortana is the language, the brain behind talking back to Cortana. It's actual entity that lives in the cloud and knows about your culture, knows about everything. Now, that's available to a limited set of languages and regions. Speech recognition, on the other hand, and speech synthesis, that's available to almost everywhere where Windows 10 is available in, I believe, about 50 or so languages. Yeah. Yes, there's a question over there. Absolutely. In the browser, yes. We're working to implement that currently with Microsoft Account and Azure Active Directory. So that should be available as well. And then we are working to enable that for third parties as well. Cool. Well, thanks, guys. I'm around. I'll be here for the beer as well. So if you want to get drunk with me, more than welcome to. Thank you.